Convex is a serverless backend platform to simplify full-stack application development. Its underlying database is written in Rust, and it uses TypeScript to integrate with reactive UI frameworks. The platform is growing, which has presented new reasons to make the code open source, and Convex recently released the source code for a self-managed version of their platform. The question of whether or not to open source is one that many companies consider. We were curious to explore the decision-making landscape around open sourcing, and today are speaking with James Cowling, the co-founder and CTO at Convex. James joins the show to talk about prioritizing developer experience, the choice to open source, risks of open sourcing, software licenses, and much more. Gregor Vand is a security-focused technologist and is the founder and CTO of MailPass. Previously, Gregor was a CTO across cybersecurity, cyber insurance, and general software engineering companies. He has been based in Asia Pacific for almost a decade and can be found via his profile at vand.hk.
Hi, James. Welcome back to Software Engineering Daily.
Thanks, Gregor. It's really nice to be here again.
Yeah, so I believe, James, we've had you on Software Engineering Daily, I believe, twice already. Is that right?
Three times, actually. Wow. I gave a podcast way back in the Dropbox days talking about building the storage system at Dropbox. So that was same founding team at Convex who built a lot of the infrastructure at Dropbox. So in a past life, I was also on the podcast.
There we go. So you've semi-answered it, but could you, just for those that maybe are just joining us new or, you know, have forgotten, maybe just give a quick introduction, kind of what led you into founding Convex?
Absolutely. So yes, like I said, we were at Dropbox for approximately forever and built a lot of the large scale infrastructure there. So as a team, we've done a lot of, you know, when I say large, I mean like, you know, multi-exabyte storage systems and distributed databases that process, you know, several million transactions per second. So, you know, very large scale. And when we left Dropbox, we kind of promised ourselves we'd never build a database ever again. Because I have a bit of like a pet peeve about companies where, you know, infra people take cool technology and turn it into a startup without really thinking much about, you know, who is benefiting. Does the world need this new complexity? Do we need to be doing things like Google, or when people are on day one of a product they're building, should they be doing things quite differently? And so we went down the path of, you know, various startup ideas and building stuff. And I think we were a little bit dismayed to find that the landscape for building products, I felt, had gotten kind of worse in many respects than it had been, you know, 10 years earlier when we were more product people, when we were, you know, building web apps and things, you know. It felt frustrating that folks were getting told on day one, hey, you know, you should be going deploying a Kubernetes cluster. Where, you know, Kubernetes, you know, 10 years earlier was only the domain of, you know, multi-billion dollar or multi-trillion dollar companies now. And even stuff like, you know, modern developments, this happened, you know, since the founding of Convex, but modern developments like React server components where, you know, developers are really thinking about, oh, the data rendered on the server kind of somewhat statically, or the data rendered from the client dynamically, or it's on the edge. It just felt like the landscape had really gotten complicated in a way that I don't think was necessarily accelerating developers to the way I would have hoped technology would have achieved by now. And so it became clear that like a rethinking of how backends work was necessary. So, you know, I think backends, when it's not providing the right abstractions to developers to move fast and build stuff and make problems go away. And so we developed Convex. There's a lot of very smart people working on software development, or, like, you know, there's a ton of really smart people working on, say, web dev frameworks. There's a ton of really smart people working on databases. I think the real problem is that some of these problems require a bit of a holistic perspective on this. I think some of these problems require thinking about how the database is designed and, you know, how the developer uses it at the same time. And that was kind of the central thesis to Convex, was to take an approach to building a backend as a service for actual product developers that can actually really accelerate people. And that did. Yeah, that required us building, yes, a development libraries for front-end development, but also for building our own database. And so we violated our rule to never build a database again, but here we are.
Yeah, so Convex, it is the, I guess, proverbial kitchen sink. It is everything. Is that right?
Convex is a backend as a service. So yes, you can think about it as the tool for a full stack developer. So if you want to build an application and you're good at, let's say you're a React developer and you're really good at building React apps, you have your React and then you have Convex, and that's the end of the story. You know, there's hosting, obviously, you know, using, you know, hosting the actual static content of your website somewhere. But Convex is the database, it's the compute, it's the scheduling and the crons and the storage and the vector search and all these things that people need for applications. A lot of folks are building AI applications on Convex now as well. So it's a bit of everything, but it's designed to not feel like that. I think that's a very important distinction. Maybe one way of thinking about Convex is it occupies the same space as platforms like Firebase and Superbase. I have a lot of respect for these platforms, Firebase in particular, for really kind of raising the bar for what people expect from like an out-of-the-box managed service. But I just don't think it's gotten all the way there for what developers need. And so, yes, Convex fits the same space. It's a database in the cloud. And there's some similarities, but there's a lot of very big differences. And I think one big difference is, you know, type safety, end-to-end type safety and relational data model and all the things that kind of you need to build like a really industrial strength, scalable backend. But I think there's a very, very big conceptual difference, which is in Convex, your queries are code. Convex is, I don't think we've settled on the kind of the grandiose phrase for this yet, but it's, you know, you could think of it as a programmable database in some respects, but that sounds scary. What Convex really is you're a product developer, you're building front-end code. The queries you write are TypeScript programs. It's TypeScript or JavaScript. You write a full program. Hey, read from this table, look up the results from over here, make a decision, write back, do whatever, right? You write your real query as a TypeScript program, and it runs as a single atomic transaction on the database. So there's no thinking about race conditions. There's no thinking about the client in the loop and high latency as a result and rendering waterfalls that come up from these multiple rounds of communication. There's no worries about exposing your data model directly to your end clients because you have your end clients talking directly to the tables that is exposed to the world, like you might see in Firebase or Superbase or GraphQL for that matter. And once you have this concept of you're running real functions inside the database as transactions, there's this new superpower that it unlocks, which is Convex knows what those functions are doing. So if you do a query in Convex, we know exactly what data that query read. And we can then automatically cache that transaction for you. There's no such concept of manual caching in Convex. We know exactly, like perfectly, what data is cacheable consistently, and we just serve it to you fast. You don't have to think about what's cached and what's not. You don't have to put memcache in front of this thing. You don't have to worry about how to reconcile or invalidate caches. And so this, you know, one kind of superpower that's unlocked is when you're running code in the database can just cache things for you automatically and perfectly. And the next extension to that, and there's a lot one can talk about Convex and I'll stop talking in a second. One extension or one kind of corollary of caching is subscriptions. And so if you execute a query in Convex, say that query says, I don't know, give me all the items in my shopping cart or give me all the unfinished to-do items or give me all the chat messages in this chat, some kind of semi-complex query that you're running. We know when that query changes. You can execute the query once and just subscribe to it. And so we have a client-side development library. So you can just bind the result of that query to a hook in React. And then anytime the data changes on the server, we'll just dynamically update the client components for you, the components on the client application. So you can build dynamic applications with no polling code, no concerns about end-to-end consistency. You just know the data on the client, the components on the client are consistently updated automatically. You know, there's many more things I can talk about Convex, but I think this the real key kind of ethos and philosophy is let's take a step back and rethink how databases and platforms should be developed. There's all this amazing history in developing programming languages and abstraction and information hiding, how to have, you know, clean primitives that fit together really, really, really well. Can't we apply that to backends? And so, yes, Convex is running functions on databases. Subscribe to them. That's it. That's the end of the story. So, yes, it's a whole bunch of stuff. You know, there's a whole bunch of features you can use just like in every other platform. But I think the real key thing is they just fit together really well. And the whole point at the end of the day is to allow developers to move fast, build real scalable systems.
So, yeah, I have a couple of questions. So maybe the one that hadn't maybe quite sunk in with me, if I'm being totally honest, but this is a question, is that Convex is itself its own database. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, Convex is a database.
Yeah, because for example, Superbase is very sort of, they fly the flag of we are a layer on top of Postgres. That is what we are. So I think I hadn't quite fully understood the Convex is its own database, and that's pretty fascinating.
Convex, the backend's written in Rust. We do our own kind of transaction coordination. We use our own kind of timestamp oracle to assign timestamps. So we do our own optimistic concurrency control and multi-version concurrency control and all the fancy database stuff that you hear about. Now, at the very bottom of the stack in Convex, we write that data currently to kind of distributed write-ahead log, which is just which is actually stored in RDS and Amazon right now. Eventually, we'll build our own thing for efficiency purposes. But the actual database itself, it's a real ground-up database. And I think that's a necessary ingredient. You know, I don't think everyone who's come before has been stupid. You know, there's a lot of smart people who have tried to solve this problem. But I just don't think you can solve it adequately unless you really have control of the front-end development libraries, like the React hooks, for example, the WebSocket protocol, and the database itself all working together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and will be very pertinent to what we will go into very shortly, which is quite a big announcement that Convex is going open source and is going to form a lot of what we talk about. One second question, this is actually, I'm just going to ask more of on a personal level. I'm sorry, listeners, if you hate this framework and you're like, Gregor, why are you asking about this? Meteor, do you remember Meteor?
I do remember Meteor.
Very different conceptually, but at the same time, I feel for its time, it was almost trying to kind of move the needle in this direction. Like, did that in any way influence Convex or not?
So Meteor and App Engine are these two platforms that I think were really cool and also ahead of their time. I think they were ahead of the time in the way that they just kind of weren't there in terms of, I guess App Engine's still around and Meteor's still around, but they were ahead of their time insofar as that, you know, they just didn't quite get all the way to the finish line in terms of being the platform people can use to build real applications and not feel like you're contorting yourself in strange ways and not feel too foreign and all that kind of stuff. But trailblazing, you know, I think, I'm not sure whether Convex was influenced by Meteor. I think Convex thinking was influenced by App Engine to some extent. I just think like it's so easy in hindsight to think things are obvious when they weren't at all obvious at the time. And to have folks come along and say, hey, like you shouldn't be using a whole bunch of infrastructure tools. You should just use a platform that solves these problems for you. I think that was really impressive stuff. I'm not sure how much direct Meteor DNA is in Convex, but certainly there's a lot of similarities. And again, like I think Meteor was just great team, cool product, ahead of its time. And the time is now, frankly. I think the time is now, one, because, you know, people are moving faster, wanting to get products out faster. They're realizing the gaps in their current products. In everyone we talk to about Firebase, for example, they love Firebase. People, no one hates Firebase. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to grow out of it. Like, oh, I liked using it until I didn't, you know? And so I think the time is now, especially when you start seeing all these movements around the edge and how do we accelerate applications and data placement and developers, like, I have like a ton of respect for the, whether you call it the Jamstack movement or the serverless movement or the, you know, the Netlify Vercel movement, because, you know, they took what was a, you know, a really kind of cumbersome, annoying barrier to development, which was, you know, deployment workflows, building in the cloud, distributed CDNs, hosting. And they just did a really amazing job of it. They're really great platforms and very ergonomic. But as larger customers start coming along with larger demands, the kind of level of complexity and sophistication you need to engage in to use these platforms properly starts increasing, right? And you see this especially with the new stuff coming out of, whether you say it's coming out of React or Vercel, or, you know, the server components like I mentioned, and this company's pushing, you know, edge databases and stuff. And I just think that we've made a bunch of problems like, you know, managing caching and hosting go away. And now we're introducing some new problems like distributed data sync and cache invalidation. And these tremendously complicated problems, right? Like all of a sudden, like life of a developer got easier and easier and easier. And then bam, all of a sudden it's getting harder. And I think there's just a, you know, at a certain point, there's a limit to how much you can make problems go away before rethinking how these development models work. And so I feel very strongly that, you know, if you're using Convex, you shouldn't do your own caching. You shouldn't do your own polling. These should be taken care of by the platform so you don't have to think about this yourself.
I think that's a very good point. And yeah, my Meteor question, I totally agree. It was ahead of its time. I had a lot of fun with it at the time. It did a ton of things sort of by magic that, you know, real-time subscriptions was one that came to mind, especially when you mentioned convex subscriptions. But yeah, it then missed a whole ton of other things, and many other things evolved outside of it. Just Node itself being one of them, evolved at a far faster pace than Meteor could ever keep up with. Same went for MongoDB, which is, again, what it was based upon. So unfortunately, the framework was too disconnected from the underlying technology. And there we go. So, you know, with Convex, especially the database not being another technology, it is in-house, so to speak. I think that must be a pretty powerful thing that has been brought to the table.
The best feedback we get from customers, because I'm obviously going to be in this podcast and I'm going to talk about subscriptions and caching and new paradigms, blah, 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 right? And that might be why someone chooses to use Convex initially. But when we survey our developers, you know, we have quite a lot of customers building, you know, real applications on Convex, you know, thousands of applications on Convex. And we ask them, like, hey, why do you use Convex? They just say, oh, well, I just like the DX. Like, I don't know, I just move faster. And that's the right answer. That's the right answer. If someone said, like, I use Convex because it has, like, it just uses optimistic concurrency control and snapshot isolation, but it's actually serializable, that's a weird reason to use a platform, right? But, you know, they use Convex because they just get to move fast and not think about it. Great. That's the perfect answer.
Yeah. And for example, Google Cloud, I love Cloud Run, and people try and ask me, why do you use Cloud Run? Why don't you use this or that? And it's the DX. It's very simple. It is a feeling I get when I use that product. It is simple, easy to use. And again, if that's the feedback you get with Convex, then it makes perfect sense. So yeah, it's not being able to kind of one-up your developer friend on what little part of Convex is the thing that's better, faster. It does what I need to do and it feels great to use. And what more can I ask for?
Yeah, and we've kind of iterated on our messaging over time. Because, you know, there is a lot of pretty serious tech inside of Convex that makes it work. But then, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, hey, developers should be just focusing on their unique value add. And for the vast majority of companies, the value add is the product they've built. We see this with AI apps as well. I mean, so I have this belief, and I'll kind of stand behind this, that for the vast, vast majority of AI applications, the hard part of the app is just building the app. It's not the AI. Like most AI applications these days, they're just talking to OpenAI or talking to Llama or whatever platform you're using that's hosting some off-the-shelf model. And the hard part is like connecting it all together. How do you have an API around it? How do you schedule background jobs? How do you like render content to the user? That's the hard part, right? So you have folks out there building AI applications, but yeah, all they want is to solve what's unique. Like, what's unique about the app isn't that they're using ChatGPT. It's that they built a cool app around it. And so that's the part that I like to kind of focus on. It's like, hey, use Convex, and then you can spend all your time focusing on the part that differentiates your app, which is the app itself. It's not like very few companies succeed because they, oh, hey, the consensus protocol is better than your consensus protocol. Like, those aren't differentiators, unless you're building an infra product like us.
Absolutely. We're going to move to kind of the topic of the day in maybe 30 seconds. I think it might just also be helpful to kind of set the scene before we jump into the open source. You know, if a developer is using Convex today, what is the difference between, say, a free and a paid tier today on Convex?
Yeah, so Convex is a freemium product. And so it's the free product you can use and you can host real applications. Many people do host like real companies that make money on the free plan. The limits are, one, you can only have two developers on a team on the free plan, and there's some usage limits that are, you know, they're pretty generous for most applications, but there's some folks who are gonna spill through those usage limits. And then so Pro is the next plan. We're actually gonna rejigger our plans soon and make them a little bit more compatible with kind of early stage startups. But yeah, basically Pro is the plan where it's like 20 right now, 25 a month for developers and with a whole bunch of usage bundled in. So the real difference right now, there's some folks, you know, they're going to want some extensions like Fivetran streaming in and out because the Convex exists within like a bigger organization that they manage. But, you know, people are upgrading for the developer efficiency, for having more people on the team and having higher usage.
Yeah, great. Okay, so highlight of the day, Convex is open sourcing. That's the sort of the headline message here. We've got to ask why. The first big question there, why is Convex open sourcing?
Yeah, and so hopefully hopefully this kind of part of the conversation is going to be interesting to folks, because this is a platform that like is currently closed source, at least the back end. Our client libraries have always been open source because, you know, you have to run them on your client. So we need to open source those for you. We're taking some code, a lot of code that we went and built, and we paid a lot of expensive software engineers to develop. And we're kind of now going to give it away. So why would one do that? It's not because the business is struggling, because it's certainly not, right? I think there's a few motivations. One motivation is Convex is quite a new paradigm for how to think about developing applications. And having it the back end as a black box, it can be a little bit of a barrier to folks in terms of trust and understanding. So being able to see the source code, being able to fork it and make changes and do what you will, I think just gives people a little bit more trust when there's a new way of doing things, a new way of thinking about things. And you know, obviously when people, what we deeply understand is when people use Convex to build their businesses, they're putting like the, you know, their business in the hands of us. And so that's something we take very seriously. The second just kind of pragmatic issue is it's a lot of bigger customers want to do stuff like run localized testing. They want to like load large data sets. They want to do a lot of automated release tests and stuff. And they want to have the source code to do that. They want to be able to have Convex running locally in their cluster. And to be honest, those are the main reasons, right? Some people would argue one would open source Convex because we want to solicit free development from the community. That's not what we're doing. You know, Convex is an opinionated platform that has a very kind of cohesive and very intentional strategy around what we build when we build. We're open sourcing Convex so people can use the platform and trust it. Now, there's also an added demographic, I guess, we'll be reaching, which is folks who don't want to pay for something. And I'm frankly really happy for those people to be using open source Convex. Now, there's a lot of downsides that come with hosting something yourself. So one caveat I should say at the very start, the thing we're open sourcing is the single node version of Convex. So we're open sourcing the version that runs on a single machine, stores data locally on that machine. We're not open sourcing this big distributed system that we manage, partly because it's our secret source, I guess. But the real reason is that's just a lot of machinery that can't easily be outsourced for someone else to manage, right? We have huge amount of complexity required in managing a system at scale for, you know, many, many tens of thousands of instances. So we're putting out this open source version that, hey, you can run it. But there's a few caveats that come with running something by yourself. You have to make sure that machine is reliable. You have to deal with like routing and your traffic layer. You have to deal with database replication and backups. And you also have to deal with migrations. You know, there's future versions might come out, and hey, you might have to kind of back up and restore, export and re-input to deal with migrations. And these are the things you pay for. And so the reality is, I expect most customers will not want to run the open source version in production because it's worth it to their business to pay someone else to do this. Certainly, if I was on the customer side, I'd be paying someone to do this. And we often are paying software as a service that make problems go away for us. So if you're paying for managed Convex, you have something that automatically scales, it's reliable, has support, handles all these things for you. But yeah, there's definitely going to be folks who use this to run applications for free, and that's just great. I mean, they're probably not the people who are going to pay for Convex anyway, so that's fine with me.
Yeah, so this is very interesting, and maybe if I could just sort of read back to you, it does feel like this is less about making Convex free for people. It's great that people who don't want to, or let's go more with can't, they literally cannot afford to pay for Convex. This opens up some kind of cool opportunities for them. But it maybe feels like there's more on the side of the code being available. There are other benefits to that. It's not about someone being able to take it and run it for free. There's actually a whole ton of other benefits with the act of open sourcing. For example, like security. I mean, that's the area that I look at the most. And just by definition, by open sourcing, security tends to improve because people see things and there's no kind of way to kind of hide it, so to speak, in a closed source. But I don't know, has that been a consideration? And like what other considerations around the code simply being visible now, would you say are like the benefits or like why Convex is doing this now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, for example, the security argument, like I'm looking forward to people being able to see the source code and then to be able to trust it, right? I don't see that as a means to improve our security, because at the end of the day, that's my job, is to ensure that Convex is secure by itself. My job is to pay people who are really, really skilled to actually go and build a good platform. So I don't think there's like, well, I wouldn't call it lazy, but I don't think there's like a, like, hey, let's throw it out and have the community improve this thing. No, it's our job to make something high quality for people to use. But I do think a lot of trust comes from putting stuff out into the community. I do think that cool stuff will get built with Convex out there. People will be able to go and make changes and do what they want. And again, like, a lot of companies very excited about this because they can use it for their local testing and for doing all their kind of internal stuff. And hey, if there's folks out there who want to use Convex open source and run their product on it, hey, that's great. And if that gets them excited and talking about Convex on wherever they talk about it, Hacker News or whatever, then that's awesome. So there's a mindset that comes around open source. I'm talking about like open source as if it's a no-brainer right now. But, you know, I talk to a lot of other companies when doing this, and a lot of founder friends, and thinking through, hey, like, there's all this, like, this is our secret sauce. Like, there's some pretty serious stuff in there. There's some pretty serious technology in there that now we're open sourcing, people can see, right? So what are the concerns and considerations? I think everyone's afraid of repeating the Elastic story. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story of Elasticsearch, and I'm going to get this slightly wrong, but essentially it boils down to Amazon AWS forking Elastic and launching Elasticsearch and cannibalizing the business, frankly. And, you know, I'm not making any legal accusations here. I think everything was done legally, right? But it's just at the end of the day, like, if you're putting your source code out there, there's this, I think it's referred to as the harmful free rider problem. Some kind of free rider problem is what it was talked about. And there's a harmful free riding problem people talk about in the open source kind of world. So specifically, we're licensing Convex under a license called FSL. It's the functional source license. And which, by the way, is not, according to the Free Software Foundation, technically open source, right? Because there's some restrictions on its use. And what the FSL says, it's very, very similar to the business source license, which came before it. It's kind of a simpler version. There's no kind of conditions attached to it. No, you know, per package kind of implementation details. It's just a very straightforward license that says for 2 years after source code's release, you cannot use that source code to directly compete against Convex. So that means you can't take our source code and go resell it as, you know, Bonvex, and it's exactly the same source code, right? You can go and use it and run your company on it. That's fine. You can do anything you want with it. They're just not directly competing with us as a company. After 2 years, that becomes Apache 2. And I like Apache 2 because it's very unrestrictive. You know, this is not like GPL or whatever. You know, basically, yeah, after 2 years, do whatever the hell you want with it. It's your source code to use, you know, within whatever the licensing requirements of Apache 2, which are very permissive. So there's a little caveat there, which is that, yes, we have this minor protection which says people can't directly compete with Convex for 2 years. Now, the reality is 2 years for us is a lot of time. And the FSL license came out of Sentry. I know the folks over at Sentry very well. I've spoken to David Kramer a bunch about this. Yeah, for, you know, fast-moving businesses like ours, 2 years is an eternity. And so typically with a BSL, the business source license, the restriction's 4 years. It's 4 years non-compete. That felt a bit too long. 4 years can, you know, somewhat be described as an eternity in startup land. But yes, we innovate fast. We have new features coming out every day. So, you know, 2 years is more than enough time, because Convex should always be, you know, doing a lot of interesting stuff in 2 years. And if not, then, hey, that's on us.
Are there any other companies, especially that, you know, listeners might be familiar with, that have gone this exact route already with that exact license and gone through the 2 year non-compete? Like, did you follow any companies kind of previously, or does this feel quite sort of a bit of a new idea to do it this way?
It's a little new. It's a little bit new. BSL, business source license, has been around for a while. Like I said, their FSL license came out of Sentry. And so Sentry is the exception logging, exception reporting platform, very, very popular. They're FSL licensed. In Sentry's case, they've gone through multiple rounds of licensing. They had some more permissive license and then moved to BSL and then moved to FSL. And so they had gone from kind of open to like having some restrictions. And obviously the community is going to push back. There's always going to be like, you know, the open source world's a pretty opinionated group of folks, right? But I think in this case, you know, we're going from closed to open, or closed to what I consider open. Maybe the Free Software Foundation doesn't consider it 100% open because you can't directly compete with us for 2 years. But I think, you know, talking to a lot of folks in the industry who have companies who are thinking the same way, I mean, at the end of the day, what we want to do is encourage an industry. Well, like the competition, you might say, like, is the competition for Convex like Superbase or Firebase in some respects, but also the competition is like legacy ways of doing things. And so the number one goal for us is to get people excited about building things in a better way. And I think the best way of achieving that goal and driving kind of interest in the product is to open source the code base or open up the code base, have people be able to use it, fork it, make changes.
Yeah. So talking of forking and making changes, you know, how does Convex sort of plan to deal with community effectively, like community contributions, obviously community feedback, everything community?
It's interesting you say that because when we thought about the risks of open sourcing, and I'm saying open sourcing in quotation marks, you know, my definition of open sourcing. When we talk about the risk of open sourcing, we pretty quickly got past the, oh no, what if someone sees our code? What if someone steals our code? And then started thinking about like, wait a second, like how does this affect our business? You know? So what are the risks? I mean, one risk is if someone like misuses it and loses their data somehow and then makes us look bad. Because like, you know, they had some forked version of Convex, whatever, and then it just didn't work very well. That's a problem. One risk is what if it slows us down? Like what if we spend so much time worrying about what the community is going to think about the releases we make and it slows down our iteration? That's a real problem. And one problem is like, how do we deal with the community, right? And I say deal with the community, obviously, like, you know, the community is the whole point of this, but it takes effort. And so, you know, the things I'm very excited about is, you know, for example, on the client side of Convex, the kind of primary client libraries right now for Convex are in React, right? If someone goes and is inspired to build, like, there are libraries out there for Solid, and if someone wants to go build a client library for Solid or Svelte or Vue or what have you, Remix, great, awesome. This is really good. I'd love to see this as kind of expands audience for Convex. If someone wants to take Convex and go make some tweaks for their own usage, awesome, go for it. If someone wants to contribute bugs back to us, yeah, even better, right? If someone comes along and says, hey, I've changed how Convex works, I think you all should operate differently with this different syntax. So we're probably not going to accept those changes, right? So this is not, and I think people, you know, it's just the reality is when you have a company, you have a responsibility to your customers. We have a really, really talented team. This is not like open sourcing to get free work done, right? We have to own our strategic direction, but hey, the community can take this wherever they want. There's also the question about support. You know, at the end of the day, we have to support the people using hosted Convex and managed Convex, but you know, developing community support around this is also a very important thing.
And how does the team feel about this? I can sort of imagine maybe, at least in maybe the early stages, it will be sort of maybe some of the team feel they've got to kind of keep one eye on the community contributions and one eye on actually what Convex is doing internally moving forwards. You know, especially I'm coming up with a pretty sort of very hypothetical scenario here, but you know, what if a contribution looks very similar to actually what you guys are doing internally? And like, could there be any conflicts between someone then sort of putting their hand up and saying, hey, like that thing you've just released, well, that looks like what I've been submitting PRs for the last month on this, trying to get you guys to merge this, and suddenly, bang, you know, there's this feature that looks strikingly like it. How's the team thinking about that? Or like, is that something you thought about? Or yeah.
Yeah, so look, we have a contributor license agreement that takes care of a lot of the stuff. If you're contributing PRs back to Convex, they become owned by the Convex project, right? But you know, what I find amusing is maybe people don't kind of think about companies this way, right? But companies are just full of regular old people who like doing cool stuff and who are excited about doing good things. And so, yeah, we want Convex to make money because we want to have money to put back into the business and build more cool stuff. But the team is just excited about doing good things. And the team's excited. Like, if someone uses Convex and says it's great, like, we all get excited and we forward those messages around on Slack and stuff. So I think the team is just, you know, we went through these early stages of like, oh, what's this going to mean? How are we going to pull it off? You know, is there a risk of intellectual property kind of eroding by putting stuff out there? But I think people are really pretty excited about this because at the end of the day, like, we just want folks to be excited about this too. It feels good to have a platform out there to feel like you're contributing to, you know, if there's someone out there who never could have afforded to run a a managed Convex instance. And as a result, they get to build a cool app. That's great. I mean, because in the day, we're just human beings who will feel good about that. Now, I will say, I think it's extraordinarily unlikely that someone can run Convex locally for cheaper than we can do it. Because, you know, I used to kind of oversee a $400+ million a year infra budget in various roles. So we spent a lot of time doing very, very deep infrastructure optimization and how to run things fast with economies of scale and all this kind of stuff. So I really do sincerely believe, this is not like marketing speak, I sincerely believe that for the vast majority of folks, you can't and shouldn't be trying to save money by running things locally. Just pay someone else to do it. Unless that company has obscene profit margins, and some companies do have obscene profit margins, but unless someone does, you can't do things cheaper yourself if you value your time above zero. You know. But I think for, you know, for new use cases that get empowered, then that's great. You know, and I don't think that risks the business at all. I think that's just a strict positive.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think as soon as anyone understands the real effort involved with running any real product on their own infra, the likelihood is a paid tier on that product's own infra is just, it's slightly about the dollar amounts, but it's actually a lot more about the time amounts. The time amounts that someone is going to have to spend dealing with this.
Yeah, one of my pet peeves is when I'm on the internet and someone says AWS is overpriced. And sure, AWS has their kind of their core features and then their kind of value add stuff. So they've got their fancy product and then they've got the core stuff like, you know, EC2 and S3. And S3 is just not overpriced. And I know this because I've designed and built a multi-exabyte storage system. And yes, you can build a cheaper storage system by cutting some corners and having less replication and using cheaper hard drives and this and that. But I can tell you, like, you know, Dropbox ended up building a cheaper storage system than S3 by a reasonably significant margin. But the economies of scale it took to get there, they kind of directly negotiated deals with hard drive suppliers and capacity teams and the kind of data center optimization. Unless you're spending, you know, and then, you know, when we had deployed what was probably around 1 million hard drives when that system first migrated from S3 to our own storage. And yes, we were doing things cheaper with a million hard drives as the first company in the world to be using something called SMR storage, which is a new type of hard drive technology. If you're not doing that, you probably can't do things cheaper unless you're willing to accept weaker guarantees. And so, yeah, I just think there are some software as a service platforms where you're just falling afoul of a business model, of a pricing model that doesn't match your usage. But for the vast majority of use cases, someone else who's an expert at this can do this better and faster and cheaper and more reliable than you can. And isn't that a great thing? Because that's the whole like standing on the shoulders kind of argument, right? If you let someone else take care of these problems and then you can move fast.
Yeah. I think the only supposed success story I've heard of moving away from something like AWS is DHH and Hey.com and Basecamp, where they made a big splash saying that they've, you know, moved to their own infra and they have MRSK, which is a framework that they devised to run all your own infra. And they claim it's saving them millions and millions. But there's a key little asterisk there, which is, but you have a team that you employed to do all the shifting and lifting back and et cetera, et cetera. And it's in their best interest. They have two very specific products that they run on this infra. So devil's in the detail. And
I'm real skeptical. Yeah. Because engineers cost a lot of money. And guess what? If you build something yourself, you're not building for today. You have to build for tomorrow too. Because like the platform providers continue to innovate as well. So it's a moving target. It's not, you know, and look, maybe Basecamp will do an amazing job of this and maybe it makes sense for them. But for the majority of folks, it's you don't have to build this once. You have to continue to innovate.
Do you in any way wish you had started Convex as an open source?
No, because moving fast was very important for us. And there's maybe like a pride dimension to the work people do. And I think we've always done high quality work at Convex, but there's a degree of thrashing around and figuring things out and iterating and adding features and taking them away. You know, Convex is long since past 1.0. And so we have a, you know, 1.0 compatibility guarantee. You know, we're not going to break your application if it's built on Convex 1.0. Before then, it was Convex 0.whatever. And we would break it sometimes. We would change features. And I think like the ability to move fast, thrash around, just figure things out, I think was really critical for us. And this is, look, this is still something we think about. There's going to be work happening on Convex internally. There's going to be PRs that the reality is when we do our PRs, there's a public section and a private section, right? And the public section goes to the open source repo and the private section is just for internal discussions that are discussions that probably require some context that someone outside the community doesn't have. So, you know, operating in the open is scary to a lot of folks and it does affect how you work. It's very important to me that this doesn't slow Convex down, that our developers can keep moving fast. They're not worried about what someone will think when they do something. And now we're at the level of maturity where I don't believe this will slow the business down. But I think previously it would have. You know, there's just the degree of scrappiness early in the startup.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess we see more on the side where a company has started open source from day one. And actually, that was kind of their whole shtick. And, you know, it's always people saying, well, how are you going to monetize or what's the business model? How are you going to commercialize this? Yeah, less, at least just from where we see starting closed source and then going open source. But I think it's really exciting. And I'm really excited just to see how Convex evolves.
Thanks,
in this way. Yeah.
Me too. And look, it's just like capitalism's a real thing, right? You got to pay for service. You got to pay for engineers, all these things. I'm glad to be in a position now where, you know, we have a real business model and we have paying customers. And then we can make the very conscious decision to like open source because we think, by the way, we think it's going to be good for the business. It's not like just pure charity, right? We think open sourcing is going to make people build stuff on Convex and that's good for us too. But I'm happy to be in this position of strength and being able to very consciously open source rather than trying to figure out a business model on top of something.
Is there a sort of exact slated date for the sort of reveal? And just a follow on to that, you know, whenever it does happen, customers, users, would they expect to see any real differences sort of immediately or not?
Current customers of Convex will see no differences. Life will keep continuing just as before. We'll keep shipping just as fast. In fact, we'll probably ship a little bit faster because we spent a fair bit of time getting Convex open sourceable. And by the way, what I mean by that is like you have to add new kind of layers into the stack to kind of split out your monitoring framework and split out all these things, right? And mock out certain parts of the stack. So yeah, customers won't see any difference apart from the fact that we will follow up later on with maybe a better local development story. So developers can, not using the open source framework, but they can just develop locally when offline, when on a plane, all this kind of stuff will come out. Currently slated for March 12th, although I haven't publicly announced that. So hey, I'm saying it right now, March 12th. So I guess we better go hit it. That's a week from when we were recording this.
Very exciting. Yeah, and actually, could we just rewind very briefly? You just touched on like the technicals involved with what you had to kind of go through to open source. And I think that's something, you know, quite a few listeners could be interested in, just to kind of get a very brief understanding. You know, you've gone from closed, going to open. Yeah, what were the kind of key pain points there from the pure technical side?
Yeah, so the big ones are kind of extricating the kind of details of our specific infrastructure from the rest of the platform. And as much as we think that Convex is well layered and architected well internally, you know, there's code in there that just assumes our monitoring stack, code in there that assumes our kind of usage of secrets in production, code that talks to something called Big Brain, which is an internal service no one knows about, but Big Brain's kind of our customer manager. It's our metadata system for storing like all our customers and who their backends are and this and that. So all this stuff had to get split out because obviously our customers, users of the open source platform don't have access to this. Also, just making sure, now Convex has always worked locally on a single machine because we use it for testing. So I said earlier that the very, very bottom of the stack right now in Convex, even though we write our own database, the actual persistence layer, like how the blocks get stored durably, is in RDS on AWS currently. We may change these things in the future. For the open source version, it uses our SQLite backend. So same database, same transaction coordination, but it writes the SQLite. And so it's just, there's quite a bit of untangling that has to happen. It's also a bit of a, you know, search and replace for any profanity in the code base. But I think it was pretty clean. I was pleasantly surprised at how clean the code base was.
Not too many to-dos just sitting around.
There's not too, well, hey, there's probably some to-do Jameses in there from a long time ago. I have to confess, I'm not a particularly active developer on Convex these days. I'm busy doing kind of manager stuff. But yeah, I'm sure there's a few to-dos floating around in there. So you can go and find something that I never finished 2 years ago.
I think that just sort of legitimizes the code base. It's not a real code base unless it has that, especially from the founding team. So
yeah, you need to have a to-do that's from the birth of the company that just lives there forever. Yeah,
definitely. Well, it has been fascinating to hear all this, and I can only wish Convex the best with what is a really brave decision in a really exciting way. So I really, really can't wait to kind of follow along. And I hope we get a chance to, I don't know, is it episode 5 would be the next one if we have you on again? We get to...
Yeah, hey, I always love being on Software Engineering Daily. So
yeah,
I'll definitely be back if I'm invited back.
I think you must be up there with the top guests. So yeah, I hope we can do this again. And yeah, look forward to hearing more.
Thanks so much, Gregor.
Thank you.